Let the mountains fill in the sea. Let it be. It ain't me.
White-collar conservative flashing down the street, pointing their plastic finger at me. They'll pursue my kind of drop and die, but I'm gonna wave my green flag high. Just don't fall on me. Right on, Mr. Business Man. You can't dress like me. It's time for me to die. So let me live my life the way I want to. Yeah. Sing on, brother. Play on.
So it's his responsibility, you know, for spreading it, not mine.
But you're a public figure, and you said it in the first place, and you must have known that it would make
would have made the newspapers.
Yes, but to say it, you know, is only to tell the truth. I'm telling the truth, you know. I don't know what everyone's so angry about.
Well, do you think you have now encouraged your fans to take drugs?
I don't think it'll make any difference, you know. I don't think my fans are going to take drugs just because I did, you know. But the thing is, that's not the point anyway, you know. I was asked whether I had or not. And then from then on, the whole bit about how far it's going to go and how many people it's going to encourage is up to the newspapers and up to you, you know, on television. I mean, you're spreading this now at this moment. This is going into all the homes, you know, in Britain. And I'd rather it didn't, you know. But you're asking me the question. You want me to be honest. I'll be honest, you know.
But as a public figure, surely you've got a responsibility to lots of
people. No, it's you've got the responsibility. You've got the responsibility not to spread this now. You know, I'm quite prepared to keep it as a very personal thing, if you will too. If you'll shut up about it, I will.
Welcome back. Jimi Hendrix here on the station. If Six Was Nine. Lovely Rita, The Beatles, off the Sgt. Pepper album, 1967, here on the station. DJ King, over here on my right, DJ Wise. Say hi, DJ Wise.
How you doing?
I can make him do other things, too.
Wait, no.
All right, anyway, so here we are, 1967, the two groups that led the psychedelic rock movement, Jimi Hendrix and The Beatles, beginning sometime in the mid-60s, influenced by psychedelic culture. The music attempted to replicate and enhance the mind-altering experiences of psychedelic drugs that were taken at the time, one of the popular ones being acid, hence acid rock, Jimi Hendrix. Pioneers included the Beatles, the Byrds, and the Yardbirds, but then other groups by 66, 67 started doing their own psychedelic acid rock weird thing. Bands like Grateful Dead, Jefferson Airplane, Jimi Hendrix Experience, Cream, Doors, Pink Floyd. And these are just the big guys. You know, these were just the mainstream artists. Go on iTunes, look up psychedelic rock or 60s psychedelic or something like that. There are a ton of artists on there that I didn't even know about that also were part of the movement, helped, helped, you know, get it out there. And as any other genre does. I mean, you know, I mean, there are kids in their basement trying to learn, you know, Stairway to Heaven.
Still.
Yeah. So there you have it.
There's still old guys in their basement trying to learn
Stairway to Heaven. Yeah. Exactly.
Almost got it.
Any day now. So yeah, those guys becoming extremely successful, timeless classics that survived to this very day and are being still being listened to people like me and Will. Here on the show, we're going to be talking about three landmark albums of the time that represented the music and the people at the time who were listening. So let's start. May 12, 1967, very important year. Are You Experienced, the debut album by Jimi Hendrix, was released to the main American public, to America, to everyone, UK and the US. The album climbed up to number two in the UK behind the Beatles album Sgt. Pepper, which we'll be talking about later here on the show. But we're going to be talking about Jimi Hendrix, who was on electric guitar, Reading on bass, and Mitch Mitchell on drums, helping start the, you know, power trio movement.
Right.
Queen tried to do this too. And sorry, Queen.
Cream.
Cream there tried to go. Do this. I'm they getting a little ahead of myself.
Well. They did it pretty well.
did a little ahead of myself. Cream, along with Jimi Hendrix, started this. Taste as well. A number of bands. But Jimi Hendrix was one of the ones that, you know,
he was definitely a part of that movement as well.
And jumped to stardom overnight.
He was, I mean, he didn't really get to pick his band members up, with that trio at least.
Yeah. He was working with the bassist from the Animals.
Yeah, the bassist from the Animals.
And he got him those guys.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about that too later. I want to talk about some of the songs on there, and you guys probably know this, Purple Haze, Hey Joe, I almost said Hey Jude, The Wind Cries Mary, and Fire, some of the hits,
right?
But, I mean, there are other great ones like Manic Depression, ones. They're on that album.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible album.
Remember, I think, was on that album.
Yes, exactly. Red House, I think, is on that album as well.
Very much so is.
Just literally, like, every single Jimi Hendrix album, his first three, I'm only talking about, is kind of like, is just as good as having a greatest hits album by him. Every song in it, including Are You Experienced, is just fantastic and nothing short of amazing.
Cool. Yeah.
Definitely. Hey Joe was the first single released by Jimi Hendrix, which was in December 1966.
That's how he got discovered.
Definitely with that song, with that cover. It was a cover.
Yeah, it was
a cover. I was trying to look for, and there was just, I was online and I was on Wikipedia looking at the song, and for the longest time I thought Jimmy wrote it.
Then I heard
rumors, not rumors, but, you know, claims that he didn't and that it was someone else's, but I honestly don't know where the original comes from.
It was some folk singer in New York. I can't remember his name. I can easily get it for you in a second, but it's, so he essentially was just covering. He was around in Greenwich Village and he was listening to a lot of different music at the time. So.
And it wasn't just Jimi Hendrix. A number of artists have recorded this song.
Who else was that? It was who else covered Hey Joe? It was maybe Jefferson Airplane. I'm not for certain, but yeah, there was another band at Monterey that covered it.
But of course, Hey Joe being one of the most popular covers of all time, might as well be Jimi Hendrix.
Might as
song.
Well be him.
I mean,
All Along the Watchtower is Bob Dylan, but
might as well
be, you know.
So you're asking yourself, how did the Jimi Hendrix Experience even start? It started in September of 1966.
Nice.
Hendrix arrived in England, like we said earlier, with his new manager, Chas Chandler, who was the bassist for the Animals at the time.
Right.
Here's a quote. Reading was chosen, one of the band members, he was chosen because Hendrix liked his attitude towards music and his hairstyle, and what he had this like huge like Bob Dylan-esque perm.
Yeah, the funny thing is both of them had to get perms, Mitch Mitchell and Jimi Hendrix, and Noel Redding was the only one that didn't have to.
And that's what, you know, Hendrix digged about him.
Yeah, he didn't even play bass. He played guitar.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he played guitar. But then he just
he's like, okay, like...
Well, I mean, he had to.
We're going to get you women. He's like, yeah, no, I'll play bass.
Well, he has to.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can't...
You can't upstage Jimmy.
Oh, it's impossible. I don't think Redding could even. I mean, he's a great bass
if
player.
If Clapton can't, then who's going to...
Yeah, no, Clapton can't... and speaking of Clapton, the band made its first official appearance on October 13th, 1966, in France. They got a gig at the United Kingdom six days later. People figured that they were an awesome band. 11 days after New Year's Day, 1967, the group appeared at the Bag O' Nails nightclub, and there was a lot of stars there that night that saw the experience.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine loved it.
Yeah.
And you guys probably know these names: John Lennon, Ringo Starr, Brian Epstein, Pete Townsend, Mick Jagger, Brian Jones, Donovan, Terry Reid, Jeff Beck, and Eric Clapton.
We're all there.
All there watching the experience.
Yeah.
Do their thing before even an album came out.
Right, right, right.
So we have here a set of incredible artists that have been, you know, basically carrying out the rock scene, and here comes this new guy.
And bam.
And
it's
kind of
like it shut them all up too.
The bar is
because he was from America too, so they were like, oh, we got this rock and roll thing, and then comes Jimmy from America and he's just blowing everyone out the water. Like
Eric Clapton, after he saw that, he was ready to quit music.
Yeah. Actually, Jeff Beck is really funny. When he met Jeff Beck, Jimmy went up and was like, oh yeah, I used your riff in this song, and Jeff Beck didn't know, like, he was like, wait, you know my songs? And Jimmy was like, yeah, of course, you're famous. And he's like, no, you're famous.
I mean, it just goes to show that, you know.
Even the stars get star-studded.
Yeah, it's crazy. Exactly. It's great. I love it. I love it. I mean, I love all those guys that I just mentioned, but those guys, you know, kind of had like, they kind of became stars at a steady pace.
Right.
But what I love about Jimmy is that bam, you know. He didn't have just a 15 minutes of fame.
It's that like class thing in Britain where they teach you to be like just so like straightforward and focused, and then Jimmy, who just didn't have any boundaries, was just like, "Okay, you know what? I'm going to take acid and I'm going to take blues and I'm going to take rock, and we're just going to do I think the quote from Eric Burden was like Clapton took it to like America, Jimmy took it to another world.
That is definitely
true. True, yeah.
And also what's interesting, you know, is that, you know, elephant in the room, Jimmy was African American.
What?
He was a black guy, yeah, that's
no!
right. No. And at the time, African Americans were typically doing R&B music, kind of more on the poppy, like, you know,
maybe even Motown, yeah.
Yeah, Motown as well. Stevie Wonder was doing the whole funky R&B thing.
There's the Southern Circuit going through.
All just that
the,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Girl groups were...
yeah, exactly.
A lot of them were... I mean, a lot were also white, but, you know, a lot of them were also African-American.
Marvelettes, Supremes, all that.
Giant. But then there's Jimmy.
And there's Jimmy, man.
On his guitar.
It was Buddy Guy, you know.
You know, pushing boundaries.
Because Buddy Guy was just like, it doesn't matter what race you are, you just see this guy, and then you're like, whoa, like, there's guys like B.B. King and Muddy Waters, and then Buddy Guy is just like... Uh-huh. Playing back of his head, getting up and yelling, and
it was like how people experienced Chuck Berry, you know,
exactly. Yeah.
He came up there. He was an African American, mm-hmm. also, of course. With African Americans doing more jazz at the time, R&B ish. He comes up with an electric guitar, pushing boundaries, and then here comes Jimmy. He's kind of like the second coming of that,
I think,
in my mind. Or not even just Chuck, Little Richard, like we mentioned a couple weeks back.
Right.
Another rock star, black, he infused R&B, but it was rock.
It was definitely rock. It was the first of rock, mm-hmm. and Jimmy was the first of acid rock. So
yeah,
you can kind of parallel the two. And yeah, so I mean, they're both really awesome, and it was cool just to have, like, essentially black people breaking the mainstream standard of mm-hmm. what music was supposed to be. Because mm-hmm. for so long, people were just trying to make it, like, oh, we need to have it be these white musicians at the top. But
yeah.
for so long, it's just, like, you know, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, Muddy Waters, and Jimi Hendrix.
And then Jimi Hendrix coming with the Civil Rights Movement.
Right, was that, exactly.
And then, you know, Martin Luther King getting killed a year later after Jimmy mm-hmm, came mm-hmm. out of the scene. So right. we were seeing big changes in in white America
in
becoming
America.
More comfortable with
yeah.
African Americans, I think.
I think it's really good, too, because then
which
music,
is great.
Because then you get to integrate music. You get to integrate like bands, and mm-hmm. it's not weird for black musicians to play with white musicians. It's
no.
just... So it's
and
perfect.
Hendrix made it cool.
Hendrix made it super cool.
So back to the history. The guys recorded 5 hit singles for their upcoming album.
Perfect.
Are You Experienced? Laid down a couple tracks as well. Summer of Love then hit. The Jimi Hendrix Experience became very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hendrix at the time of 67 released 2 albums, 2 of his 3 albums before he died.
Mm-hmm.
Access, Bold as Love, Are You Experienced? Which one do you like better?
Access, Bold as Love, or Are You Experienced?
Yeah.
Can I throw in a third option?
All right.
Can I throw?
It has to be 67 though.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Because we're here in the 67.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, you could do the Monterey Pop Festival, which is 67.
There you go.
Access, yeah. Bold as Love. No, Access, Bold as Love was more of a commercial album. Jimmy, you could kind of tell, didn't really want to do that one, but I'd go with Access, Bold as Love, because Access, Bold as Love, the song itself is really cool.
Mm-mm.
And
I actually heard that today
when
I was writing the script, so
yeah, we played it last week on Musicology, just the outtakes of it, and it's really cool. It's just a really fun song to listen to, and Little Wing is really fun too. And then he also has some less ambient kind of like harder songs, which were kind of more along the lines of like I want to think of like a harder song off Access, Bold as Love.
A harder song?
Electric Ladyland was really
more. If 6 was 9.
Yeah, that is definitely. It's a
one that we played.
Spanish Castle Magic, yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly.
So, personally, I would go with Access, Bold as Love. I do love Are You Experienced, but he came into his own with Bold as Love, I think, because he connected with Mitch Mitchell more.
Mm-hmm. And there you have it. Are You Experienced? 1967, quickly followed by Access, Bold as Love. 2 1967 albums here on radio.dominican.edu. Let's go to the news.
Oh, yeah.
All right, news story number 1. World grain reserves are so dangerously low that severe weather in the United States or other food-exporting countries could trigger a major hunger crisis next year, the United Nations has warned. Failing harvests in the U.S., Ukraine, and other countries this year have eroded reserves to their lowest level since 1974. The U.S., which has experienced record heat waves and droughts in the year 2012, now holds in a reserve of a historically low 6.5% of the maize that it expects to consume in the next year, says the UN. Prices of main food crops such as wheat and maize are now close to those that have sparked riots in 25 countries in 2008. FAO figures released this week suggested that 870 million people are malnourished and the food crisis is growing in the Middle East and in Africa. The figures come as one of the world's leading environmentalists issued a warning that the global food supply system could collapse at any point, leaving hundreds of millions of people hungry, more riots, and this could bring down some governments. In a shocking new assessment of the prospects of meeting food needs, Lester Brown, a president of the Earth Policy Research Center in Washington, says that the climate is no longer reliable and that the demands for food are growing so fast that a breakdown is inevitable unless urgent action is taken. In 2012, according to the FAO, food prices are already at close to record levels, having risen 1.4% in September, following an increase of 6% in July. His warnings come as the UN and world governments reported that extreme heat and drought in the U.S. and other major food exporting countries had hit harvests badly and sent prices spiraling. News story number two. New albums by Taylor Swift, Kendrick Lamar are out now. Local CD store or iTunes if you like those artists. And new albums coming up by Aerosmith soon, Christina Aguilera, and Green Day. If you like those guys, they're coming out with new albums. That's cool. So look forward to those. And finally, news story number three. A hungry, confident Barack Obama finally found Mitt Romney's glass jaw, and he scored a knockout in a decisive third round of the 2012 presidential debates. A snap poll by CBS scored the fight Obama 53, Romney 23, tie 24, with Obama winning. Indeed, the 30-point margin of victory was larger than the 24-point win the same poll gave to Romney in the aftermath of the notorious first debate. Mitt Romney's foreign policy has never been more than a laundry list of tough talk. His reliability repeats the same crap every time he hits the national stage, and Obama had evidently been studying Mitt's material, calling him out on many things throughout the night, throughout the last two debates. You should have seen Obama when he started speaking after, you know, Romney said whatever the hell he said. Obama was like, bam, 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 this was wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is what we have to do. And this is why Romney's thing doesn't work. Here we have Romney essentially sometimes repeating some of the policies Obama said before, trying to make him, you know, be in the center instead of the far right, which he essentially is, and kind of stumbling sometimes. So it was kind of hard to see Romney, but Obama did great. And when Romney tried to justify his plan to increase the Pentagon spending by $2 trillion, he launched into his familiar complaint that ship for shift, quote, our Navy is now smaller than any time since 1917. And Obama then delivered the breakthrough zinger of the debates, one that sent hashtag horses and bayonets trending on Twitter worldwide. Discussing Syria, Romney sought to paint the Assad regime as a proxy for Iran. Fair enough. But then he completely forgot his Middle Eastern geography. He said that Syria is Iran's only ally in the Arab world, and it's the route to the sea. No. It's called the Persian Gulf because it runs along the coastline of Persia, aka Iran. Syria and Iran don't even share a border. That's a little country called Iraq in the middle, Romney. I think you have to study up on your geography. So even if Iran were landlocked, Syria still wouldn't provide any route to the sea. I hope you all are registered to vote for this election, November 6th. I hope you vote for the candidate that you wish can best fix the problems of this country. And please do it. If not, then you can't complain. And that's the news for you here on radio.dominican.edu 1967. We're going to be taking a break here in just a moment, talking about two other amazing albums of the time, Acid Rock, Music Central, giving you the good stuff, Pink Floyd. We'll be right back.
Some way out of here, say the Joker to the thief.
You've been running all over town now. All right, welcome back to 1967 here on radio.dominican.edu. Pink Floyd, Astronomy Don't Mind. Let's Spend the Night Together, The Rolling Stones. Here on Music Central, psychedelic music. All right, so let's jump to August 5th, yes. 1967, with the release of The Piper at the Gates of Dawn by Pink Floyd, their first album and the only album that has the main singer, leader of Pink Floyd, Syd Barrett, in it as main writer and singer and lead guitarist. Space, scarecrows, gnomes, bicycles, fairy tales. It's your quintessential 1960s album. But how did it all start? Architecture majors Roger Waters, Nick Mason, and Richard Wright met up with Syd Barrett, an art major, and began jamming together since 1962.
Oh, yeah.
Touring as the Pink Floyd Sound in 65, finally signing up to EMI in 67, to start their really, really weird and strange career.
They had a weird history, actually. I was trying to look up Pink Floyd's history, and it's just like, they went here, and then he left, and then,
Then Dark Side happened.
Yeah, and then suddenly out of that, just Dark Side.
Like, yeah, it's like...
You're like, well, okay, I don't ask questions.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take it.
You know, when you listen, I mean, compared what we... Last week, we listened to Dark Side, and awesome. Now here we are in 67...
We go back a bit.
It sounds so primitive, you know, Piper at the Gates of Dawn compared to Dark Side, because Dark Side is just so nice and polished and amazing.
That's what Richard Wright was saying. He was saying like, I'm gonna like everything we did led up to Dark Side. Even Wish You Were Here and The Wall weren't like everything up to Dark Side was just that's what they were working for.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of funny. They definitely got what they wished for to become famous.
Right, right, right.
And then when it happened, they didn't know what to do with it.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, you know, they weren't famous for the first time after Dark Side. They were moderately famous, and they're one of the leaders in the 60s movement, but I don't think they had, you know, international fame.
They weren't,
until
Dark Side.
It was more like British, U.S., you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So recording that album started in February 21st, 1967. The band was actually invited to watch the Beatles record the song Lovely Rita, which you guys heard a couple minutes ago. Yeah, during that song, the Pink Floyd eyes were watching the Beatles record this, which was really interesting. And they, you know, they shared the same studio at the time, EMI, recording two amazing albums, you know, Piper and Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
Which is something that I really don't hear a lot of. I had to find this. I actually just recently found this, you know, that quote that, or that fact that the Beatles and the Pink Floyd actually met.
Right.
I wish there was, I wish there was more on that.
Wasn't it the, I mean, they knew each other from then on, right? It was.
Okay. Well, of course Pink Floyd knew who the Beatles were.
No, I mean, because of they recorded at Abbey, or they recorded at Apple, didn't they?
Yeah. Right. It was. I mean, the Beatles had been recording there since you know early
the Beatles
60s.
Way more than I did. So I'm not even gonna try.
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying is that they recorded since the 60s, and then here comes Pink Floyd in 67. You know, Beatles working on their greatest album, Pink Floyd working on their first.
Yeah, so
it's. I wonder what kind of conversations they had.
Yeah, just like we're gonna release a masterpiece, and Pink Floyd's like, they don't even have one album. Like, Sid Barrett's still crazy. Like,
they had like three singles.
Yeah, like, just like, okay.
Sid Barrett was like at the, you know, height of his mental breakdown.
Yeah,
like, and then here's the Beatles. Like,
they're just like huge. Just everyone loves them. You can't go anywhere without seeing them.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially at the time.
You see Sid Barrett like trying to like drink nervously a cup of water, but it's like a Beatles cup. Like,
oh yeah.
Oh god, like, can't get away.
So by the time the album came out, Sid Barrett was burnt out. You know, he was extremely burnt out on all the drugs, the acid, whatever the hell else he was taking at the time.
Who came in?
He became distant, didn't show up at gigs sometimes. Sometimes showing up very, very high on acid, which is, you know, not always the proper thing to do before, you know, doing a concert. You know, you're trying to make money here, you know?
Not unless you're Jim Anderson.
Yeah, well. But, I mean, not trying to make money, but trying to, you know, present yourself.
Be responsible, at least.
Right, exactly. Like, you can't
show up completely.
You know? And, you know, and like we're saying now, you know, we have proof of this. You can't just show up completely stoned or whatever the hell out of your mind during a gig. Barrett would detune his guitar during Interstellar Overdrive until the strings fell off. And sometimes he would just stand there motionless.
He was just so
like, and then the other bandmates like, "What the hell, dude?
Yeah.
Like you sing now.
Yes,
come in."
Me.
Now.
He's like...
He's
like eating an Eggo on like the top of Nick Mason's drum set. Like, come on, dude. Like, get up.
But, you know, what was going on in his mind, Barrett, was he was getting more depressed.
Yeah.
And as 67 rolled by, 68, here comes, you know, good old... handsome
football playing
French speaking David Gilmour.
Oh, he's so cool.
To fill in the shoes of a band that needed a main singer.
That must have made him way more depressed. Just like,
I mean, look at David.
You know, he speaks French, he comes out, and he's really good at guitar too. Yeah, he's not even just like, and he can sing.
So there you have it. You know, everyone hates getting replaced.
By the popular kid. It's
all for the best.
It was all for the best.
It was for the best. The album is considered one of the greatest albums of all time.
Yeah.
Rolling Stone put it number 347, list of 500 of greatest albums of all time. Not my favorite Pink Floyd album. It's, like I said, it's very primitive compared to, my other favorites like Dark Side and Metal and, you know, Wish and The Wall. But it's a very interesting piece of music to listen to. And, you know, you feel the 1960s, you know?
Yeah.
You know, they don't screw around.
It's
still
psychedelic.
It's extremely psychedelic. And there are some great songs on there, like, you know, like the one I just played, Astronomy Domain, Lucifer Sam, Bike is even pretty cool. You know, but some songs are kind of a little repetitive.
A little poppy.
Yeah, a little poppy, a little just kind of the same sometimes.
Right, right.
Like, but, you know, whatever. It was a phase, and they moved on. They got David, and the rest is history. And you know, Pink Floyd in the 60s were really weird. You know, they had this album, Saucer Full of Secrets, and other great ones. But there you have it. The Pink Floyd next album we have here on the station, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Oh, yeah.
June 1, 1967. At the heart of the Summer of Love, or at the beginning, basically, with this album. Extremely successful. Extremely successful album, of course. I mean, number one, it was by the Beatles. So, of course, they had to get number one. Number one. Like, right there on the charts. You know, and extremely popular. Number two, they broke boundaries here in music. They completely left their mop top. You know,
yeah,
Mod she loves style. You, you know, I want to hold your hand stuff, and started writing about really, you know, strange things, left, you know, just drums, guitar, piano, and percussion, and went on to use the Hammond organ, the harmonium, the clavichord, sitars, tempura, maracas, the French horn, tablas, violins, tape loops, sound effects, the Lori organ, which I don't know what that is, the kazoos and congas, all being used by the Beatles. All of a sudden, why? Because they just became so tired with touring. By the end of 65, 66, you know, if you see the footage of them at Japan, they're not even smiling. They hate it.
They hate it.
They hate it. They're singing the same crap they've been right, singing for years. They just had to get out.
They needed to try something new. They needed to bring in their Zolophones and their hydroplanes and their
buckets of water.
Yeah, I said yeah.
No. Yeah, but honestly, no, that's not even a joke. They actually had a bucket of water.
Oh, really?
Yeah, during Yellow Submarine.
You just see Ringo smacking a bucket of water. Yeah, like
hey guys,
look at me, everyone.
but yeah, 66. They started experimenting a lot. They were still touring, but they managed to pull out a. Super experimental
Super
album.
Awesome album, yeah.
Revolver, done with touring by the end of 66. They ended in SF.
Really?
Candlestick Park.
Oh, awesome. Yes. Awesome.
A good place to end. No one, the audience at the time didn't know that this was going to be their last concert. They thought, hey, you know, next year, they're going to be singing I Want to Hold Your Hand until they're 64.
Until they're old and wrinkly and Bob Dylan-y and shouldn't be yelling at the microphone.
But no. The Beatles said, no, we're going to go in the studio. We're not going to tour for you guys. We're going to create an album that, you know, is about a band called Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah.
And that band has a lot of really interesting sounds. They left their pop rock stuff and went on to go write about, you know, songs with Indian classical music, raga rock, music hall, baroque A-pop, circus music, psychedelic rock, pop music, and rock music, all in Sgt. Pepper, in there, packed together. One of my favorite albums of all time. We're going to be playing for you that album. Three amazing albums from 1967. Are you experienced Jimi Hendrix, Piper at the Gates of Dawn, Pink Floyd, and Sgt. Pepper? Listen to them if you have not heard them already. Listen to the 60s music. It's amazing. And yeah, I leave you with Backdoor Man, The Doors, and then a nice Beatles hit from 1967 off Sgt. Pepper. Thank you so much. Music Central, I'm DJ King. DJ Wise, do not miss
Musicology
coming up right next. After this, 9 o'clock, going to be talking about the fabulous 60s, you know, bell-bottom jeans and Chevys and mustaches and whatnot. So here we have it, The Doors. Thanks for joining us. Yeah.
human, eat your dinner, eat your pork and beans. I eat more chicken than any man ever seen.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Eat marshmallow pies. Everyone smiles as you drift past the flowers that grow so incredibly high. Newspaper taxis appear on the shore, waiting to take you. With plasticine pauses, with looking glass ties. Suddenly someone is there at the turnstile. The girl with kaleidoscope eyes. We'll be right back.
she got Henny, Danny, Missy, and yeah.